Hello, imaginary people.
This is Poetic Diary number 4. One of its kind with three different guests.
Guest?
Three different guests. Okay. I'm not a guest.
Okay.
You're saying? Number one, guy who I probably met, help me out,
97. So
97-ish? 96, years. I think. Even.
96, yes, end of 96.
Possibly 5.
No, I didn't come in 95.
You
know...
You chose not to come in 95. So anyway, holding it. The man of, I guess, many names, but for now, Khalid Kayum, also known as Adam, also known as Gregory, Colin, Clit.
Spaniard.
Melonhead. Oz. Bunch of things. That guy. His lovely, soon-to-be...
Oh, why'd you look at me?
No, I may have fucked that up, because... I don't know if I meant to tell people that.
Oh, that's yeah, go
you
for
can
it.
You can tell, yeah.
Soon to be wife. That was really bad.
You looked at me.
Soon to be. I was just meant to say lovely companion.
Partner.
Girlfriend.
Soon to be. Lovely partner. Soon to be.
Oh, really? Is
yeah,
it?
They go
partner. Partner.
That's really yeah. ambiguous.
Partner or fiancé, then wife, husband okay. thing.
Okay. Yeah. It's a lovely lady from Italy, also known from... Kuala Lumpur Times from school, Daniela Davi.
Hello.
And the lovely Maya, who is also my wife.
Hello.
Hello, Maya.
Hello,
Galicia. Really good to have you on the program.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here at the studio.
Welcome. Do you like the lighting situation that we have going?
Studio.
Actually, two candles.
Two candles.
Very proper.
Very romantic.
Yeah.
14 more candles and it'd be 16 chapels.
It would be. And if we had one less, it would be one. Mathematics. Also movie titles.
Live doggy audience.
Live doggy audience.
You didn't introduce the...
Oh, two dogs.
Canines.
Yeah. Two dogs happening. Living in the place to be. I gotta have a look at the time so we don't go for too many hours. 2014. Got it. Okay. But... The reason why you guys are in this country now is because you had a holiday thing.
Yes.
Yes, secondary.
Tell us about it. Well, you've been here before, but
yes.
Danny, no.
No, I haven't. I've never been to Finland.
What do you guys think, just overall, about
like
shit
Finland.
We made you do?
I like it, too.
Wait, is this like, you're asking us, and you're like, okay, I hope they say nice things?
No, you don't need to. I'm not. This,
we would
this,
say nice
this thing
by
isn't
proxy.
Sent to the tourist board of anything. Yeah. So.
No. I just wanted to come back up and visit. You know, not being able to make the wedding last year was pretty fucking frustrating for me. So,
which was
a long way.
Yeah,
long way.
Pretty much also my fault.
Regardless of the long way, it was just work.
Yeah,
I was in
work,
Canberra.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you had that thing. That's right.
So it was nice to finally come out and. I think I'm just
trying to catch up
and come visit you guys. Really, if you were in Estonia, we would have just gone to Estonia. If you were in fucking Timbuktu, we would have come to Timbuktu, really. You just happened to be in Finland. Which
Finland
is good
by,
being
by,
Finnish.
By accident, yeah.
Totally by accident.
Quite a by accident.
Good coincidence, yeah.
Finland is really nice, though, from what we've seen of it. I really like it.
Yeah, for like 6 hours every day.
Yeah,
yeah.
for what you can see in the daylight, which lasts approximately 6 hours at this time of year.
Next time you'll come here when it's summer and light. And
exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's really nice, though, like, just...
But
it's very nice.
it's funny, because... Well,
I hear
it's, you didn't find it funny, but I didn't even notice the sunlight. It was kind of not an issue to me. Danny was like, I miss the sun a little. And I was just we were walking downtown Helsinki by Stockman, and I was just like, yeah, okay, just kept walking.
I'm just not used to it. I've never come so far up north, I guess.
Mm.
So the fact that the sun goes down, well, when we first arrived, it was like 3:30 in the afternoon, really threw me off.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit, it's not even, you know, 5. Even in Milan in the winter, dead of winter, it goes down at about 5:30.
Yeah.
So, it was just really strange. But, you soon get used to it. You're just kind of like, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the Finns get depressed, too, because of the
lack of
darkness.
Lack of vitamin D.
Yeah.
And it's the prolonged effect.
Mm.
Like, obviously, you didn't turn suicidal in a week.
No. Obviously not.
That would have happened.
That would have come about eventually.
And I'm sure it's also not just the darkness. It's like if you're living a shitty life and stuff's just not working out, and then all on top of that, it's the overbearing darkness. Yeah. Then I wouldn't say the catalyst, but surely it doesn't help.
Oh, definitely.
I remember that from last time where they, I don't know who it was at rugby training, said, it's the case of people surviving the winter and realizing their life is not any better when the summer comes, then they kill themselves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
Suicide rates go up in the spring. Yeah. That's crazy. Not during winter. Mm. Yeah.
Is it correct? I had read somewhere that typically Nordic countries, like very far northern countries, have higher suicide rates because of this reason, because the winter was so long and dark.
Yeah.
Makes sense, I suppose. I mean, you definitely, like, from someone who has never experienced it, I definitely feel it, because I am used, even if, you know, I'm not outdoors most of the day, for example, but we just came from Oz, where the sun was starting to go down at 8:30
at night,
when we left in December.
Yeah.
So, that was already, I was just like, ah, yay! And then come to Italy, 5, and then come to Finland, it's 3:30. Guess it's time to go to bed, fellas. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, like, you come home from work, and it's dark, and let's say you meant to go buy a new washing machine or something. Hmm. You've got to run errands. It's like,
get so much more done on the in the summertime.
And you feel energetic. It's like, oh yeah, let's go play.
do shop hours change in summertime? It's just all the same.
Yeah, it's all the same. Yeah, pretty much. But like, I would never go shopping winter time at 7:30.
Yes,
it's already
pitch
almost
black.
Light. Yeah,
maybe not as much as you felt the sun, lack of sun.
Mm.
What I found interesting was we generally ate quite early, but then last night at dinner at the farmhouse,
the manor.
I thought it was a bit odd seeing people's tables set for 8 o'clock. Because I think I associate darkness or dusk is dinner time.
Yeah.
And then it's, you're eating so late, but it really is still 8 o'clock. Yeah. Time is not pulling a magic trick on me.
Yeah. That's the thing. Do Finnish people have dinner earlier typically, like at an earlier time?
My guess would be earlier. Yeah. Earlier than most
Mediterranean people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, because I know in Milan we have dinner about 8 o'clock, but in Rome, for example, they'll have it 9:30. It's easy.
Yeah.
They'll have dinner.
That's crazy.
But as in me and you, honey, we eat quite late. Like, we don't.
Yeah.
Because we just.
There's always something like someone's got training or something. Yeah. Like, when you get home from work, you just bit of toast or whatever you do. Like, quite a few times it's me just coming home. And then going, oh shit, I've got to change my clothes, got to find all my shit, and then go.
Mm.
Plus, of course, I don't want to eat before training anyway.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, it's it's interesting with the timing after work. I learned this year because of the dogs. Just by chance, I was done every day at 3:34, so I could take the dogs out.
Yeah.
In the afternoon before, I had to pick her up from uni, placement, work, wherever she was. And you get into a habit. It's definitely a habit where it's just convenience. You just find something, you grab something to eat. And we told you the story about her mother makes like a vat of meat sauce like that, breaks it up, freezes it. And sometimes, if just hungry, we'll eat by ourselves. Purely because...
That is really convenient.
Timing.
That reminded me, like, we've started doing this thing where if we're in the grocery store, just get a big bit of meat or something, and we just throw it in the freezer for no reason, but just to have something.
We have the same habit.
Yeah, it makes good sense. Like, it's quite full actually right now.
Yeah,
we should defrost it now that it's actually cold.
Yeah.
So we can just
leave the meat outside in the snow.
Yeah. Enough snow now.
Yeah,
that's
and
right.
It's cold enough.
It's good that they can do it. It's 40 degrees in Melbourne recently, so it's like, let's defrost our freezer.
Ah, interesting question coming up. Not really, but I want to know.
Yeah, this is like the
interesting for you, honey.
Now, how do you defrost your
lifestyle
or freezer?
We never do it. We do it once a year.
But you have like a special chisel. Really?
To be fair, I largely depend on the good graces of other people not closing the fridge door to defrost it for me.
Oh, no.
So I'll come down like, oh, it's defrosted.
No. Oh, shush. No, we have the, like a metal spatula that just crunches it like you do with your car in the mornings.
Yeah. But you could just, ah, cold snout.
Dog. Yeah, she's covered in snow.
Guest five.
Yeah, you could just systematically, up to a certain point, eat everything.
It's cold.
Pretty much from the freezer, and then you could just leave it open.
That's what usually gets to. We usually eat everything, and then
not in one day.
No.
Just everything in one day. Though, you know what? My mom taught me a cool trick. If you're leaving overseas for quite a long time, and if you're in a country prone to blackouts, malaria. Not that, but also. Like KL, for example. Yeah. If you're in Malaysia and you get blackouts. A good way to find out if the food in your freezer is still edible when you get back is you put a little pot with an ice cube in it in the door. Or just in the freezer somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you find that the ice has melted by the time you get back, that means the freezer was off for too long.
Quite a long time, yeah.
And the meat now has to be thrown out.
Oh, so, that's a good trick.
That was a pretty good trick, yeah. It's good for places like Malaysia where the electricity may or may not go out every other week.
I'd like to know how long it takes an ice cube to melt when a blackout occurs.
Oh, it must take a very long time because the freezer is still quite cold. Yeah. It's got all the ice around it. So in order for it to have defrosted, too long for meat to still be good, let's just say that.
One time in KL, when they had the water cuts, my mom didn't want to use the tap. We had the purified water tap, and there was just issues. And she's always embarrassed about the story, but I find it something very cute, like an old person does. And
she's gonna hear this.
Yeah, of course.
I don't think she listens to my podcast.
I'll make her listen.
We'll invite her just for this reason.
Oh boy!
And she's like, "You can fill it up and put it in the freezer." And I'm like, "Why would I do that?" She's like, "Cause it'll purify it." I was like, "What do you mean it'll purify it?" She's like, "When you freeze things, they die. So the bacteria will die." And I was like, "I love you, Mommy." But she said it in such an endearing way, like,
"Hello."
Like she really believes it.
Yeah.
Like,
when you freeze things, they die. So if there's bacteria in it, it'll die too. And then when you unfreeze it, it's good. I'm like, "Yes." That's why, you know, meat never goes bad if you freeze it after, you know, you leave it out or anything like
that. 10 days and then freeze it. Everything's fine.
But very much, you know, in that manner a mother does when a child falls over, cuts its leg, thinks it's going to die. And it's like, it's okay. It's okay. It was very much,
we'll just put you in the freezer for a while.
We'll stick your leg in the freezer. All the bacteria will die.
Yeah. Like, you saw that train movie. Oh, God.
The train movie.
Well, the whole movie's in a train. Oh, end of the world.
Yeah.
The Snowpiercer.
Snowpiercer. When, as a punishment, movie. The dude had to put his
arm out
through the hole.
Oh.
That was pretty grisly.
That was fucked up.
What happened?
Well, then they smashed his arm with a hammer and
so
it broke off.
Yeah, so they froze it, basically.
Because it was like nuclear winter, more or less, right?
Mm.
I don't remember what the premise was that it had frozen over. I think it was nuclear winter, like some big thing happened to all the clouds blocked everything and
it became
very cold.
Just massive boring because of the dust and the shit, and then it just
I think that's what
in
it was.
And no sunlight.
And yeah.
I can't remember.
But we watched it without subtitles for the Japanese guy. Or was he Korean? Or Chinese?
Were there subtitles available? Because we were just like, what the hell is he saying? Well, I feel like this is important.
When I watched it, we actually rented the DVD, so of course it had Finnish subtitles.
Oh, great. Any interesting Finnish subtitles in it? Akin to...
Not really.
What if Dick Cheney took all of our surfboards? That's going to be amazing.
What was that? Terms and Conditions Apply documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Some guy was saying, what was that thing? What if Dick Cheney's waterboarding thing never came to life?
Yeah. Waterboarding.
What if he wanted to waterboard
everyone.
Yeah, everyone who did something like that. Yeah. And the Finnish subtitles was like, well, what if Dick Cheney wanted everybody's surfboards? Or took away everybody's surfboards?
It would be, either one would be very concerning.
He was holding my daughter. Kidnapped my daughter.
But like holding.
As in hugging.
In English.
Yeah.
It's like holding, like holding away at some location, or keeping hostage, or keeping prisoner.
But it's also holding, like.
But a lot
Someone's
of times.
Holding your daughter.
Of course, because every program's got Finnish subtitles. You, even if, of course, you understand, you still read them all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of mistakes.
It's a like when you get. Pirated DVDs in Malaysia.
Oh, they're awful.
And you get the really bad subtitles that have nothing to do with anything. They just guesstimated by the sounds coming out of their mouths.
Do you think it's some guy who thought, oh, this sounds like this? Or do they have like some weird machine that's like, yeah, that'll do it, like Google Translate?
Yeah.
I think at the beginning it was someone who would
type
it out.
Oh,
and obviously didn't have a very good command of English.
They're still using Alta Vista.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And it's like some stuff, though, has nothing to do with anything. So I don't know if it's an actual translator.
And then now there is the software, like Dragon
software,
Dictation.
Yeah.
So the subtleties and inflections are all missed.
It's all so bad.
No. I remember old school copied VHS tips from Chinatown.
I do too.
I remember there was this guy who
back in our day.
We kind of got to know because my dad knew him for some reason, because maybe he went there with clients or something. Like, he sold watches, and that's when I was 11. And still, when we went there just by ourselves to eat and whatever, he'd be there, but he'd, like, have a completely different enterprise. He's like, oh, fuck, I remember you. Like, this big Indian guy.
Did he still sell watches, though? Because there's
one
guy.
No, he sold something else. Well, maybe it was different times, but, like, it was always like, oh, now he's in charge of t-shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one guy, though, in Chinatown that's been there for donkey's years, like, at least 15 years, that is my dad's go-to guy to get knockoff watches. Like, really good ones, though. Like,
they're different.
Like, suspiciously good ones.
Tiers of, like, categories of quality with fake shit.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of sellers, though, that will have, like, the kind of so-so stuff out in their little stalls and stuff. But then you kind of question them a little bit, and you'll find out that they have the stuff that fell off the back of the truck. And you're just like, wow, this is real.
I like with the t-shirts, they always pointed to where the seams were, and if there was a seam on the side, and then that was a good quality shirt.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
As opposed to where else would the seams be?
Because, like, in t-shirts, usually they don't have the side seam.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, oh, look.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Very nice quality.
Did you have to look at my shirt to just...
Yes, I did.
Are you wearing a shit t-shirt?
No. Are you wearing a shit t-shirt? No, well, but some
you
of the older
the
shirts, the ones that you got from Chow Kit.
Oh, that's different.
The side.
Those are classics.
They come from everywhere.
Yeah, we had some classic ones.
Yeah.
I still
have Bush Cheney 04.
Oh, yeah.
I still have Camp True Point.
Yeah.
The bright yellow one.
Astro Burger.
Astro Burger's gone. That shirt
is gone.
It's
one big thing.
I think I slowly started getting rid of my Chow Kit shirts. I don't think I have a single one left.
That means you have to come back and get more?
Celebrate Israel.
Oh
my goodness.
You still have the I'm huge in Japan.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the one you wore the
other
day.
Yeah. I think that's the only one, really.
I'm huge in Japan.
I
had a whole bunch of Camp Ernst things.
I had, I can't remember what it was. It was a term for where people go to die. Hospice.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it meant. So it was like, celebrate the hospice, something like that. And my mom's like,
that's
hello.
Terrible.
We have a guest. We have the fourth guest now, Mirko.
Mirko.
Finnish.
Also known as Mirko.
Yeah.
Mirko. Mirko.
Mirko Krokop.
Yeah. By way of Spain.
Mirko. Kicks you in the head.
Or the liver.
Just like,
cute eyes.
I want to be in this podcast also.
Gonna miss the pups.
The guys.
We miss our dogs.
Like duck eyes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she has got duck eyes.
I think it's at a certain
point. She has dog eyes.
Certain point when the fur is a specific length, then it looks like a duck.
Yeah, when her fur is shaved, she looks
now like you talk about ducks and she's left.
No. I'm offended.
Fuck you guys.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah. I'm a dog.
No, that's I never knew that about Chinatown and the one guy being there. I wonder if Chinatown has some sort of hierarchy. Like
Hopkins been there for.
I would guess, but I don't know. I kind of. I always think back room instead of what you see. So I'm thinking like it has to be some kind of hierarchy. Somebody runs that shit.
Of course.
Well,
in sort of districts.
The fact that the police hardly ever busts them for having clearly illicit stuff on
sale. Pay them off.
Exactly, but that means that there's some kind of hierarchy going on in the background.
Yeah, but still, if it was individual shops, it could just be a thing like, all right, you set up here, this is what you sell, therefore, all right.
I get a cut, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. This and this guy from the police is going to come by every month.
You pay. I remember, who's the shopping mall next to Sungai Wang? Imbi.
Oh, yeah.
They had a room. They used to have a lot of games and movies down there.
Yeah.
Those guys had to pay the cops off. Mm-hmm. They had their own little system going.
Yeah.
And Imbi Plaza has changed a lot now. Remember how it used to have all these bootleg electronic stuff?
Mm. Now it's legitimate.
Now it's gone all legit.
Yeah, I remember like proper brand name stores.
Yeah, they've got an Apple retailer in there and everything.
Yeah, they just Malaysians buy a lot. I don't know. Malaysia supposedly has some of the worst
consumer
credit card debt in the world. Something upwards or beyond what was the US in 2008 before the crash.
I mean, I always thought it was weird, like the little shanty town next to the school, next to the graveyard, where the school buses went sort of back way in.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's very subjective because I'm not used to living like that. But still, it's always they had some type of Mercedes, of course. Cars much cheaper here than over here, but always like a satellite dish for cable channels on the rooftop of the sort of tinfoil roof that they had over their heads.
Yeah, even the most basic of living conditions, they'll still have Astro.
Yeah,
they'll still have quite a few amenities that you would expect.
I always thought it was interesting the idea if you say a good proportion of your income went to a car, that would indicate your income was more than what it really is or was.
Yeah.
And then you take someone back there. It's like the values are so different. I would be a little bit embarrassed, like, oh yeah, I've spent all my money on a car and I live in a...
Do you think, like, of course, in a certain way, I don't think there's such a thing as Malaysian culture.
Mm.
Because there's Malay, Chinese, Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So they all got their own thing, including religions. But, like, do you think, if I use that term broadly, does Malaysian culture have that thing of perceived success or just perceived standard of living?
Oh, yeah.
In a big way?
Yes.
I found Malaysian culture, especially after working there, was 90% of what you show.
Yeah.
And 10% of what you actually have.
That's why the concept of losing face is so strong.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because when they're embarrassed because, you know, something comes out that they don't want to surface, it's such a big deal. It's like, oh, you made me lose face. It's a huge deal. Yeah. Whereas, you know, in some other countries, you might say, like, just whatever. Yes, it's embarrassing, but you shake it off eventually. Yeah. You get over it.
How's
it's not so, that big of a deal.
How's that same thing in Italy?
In Italy.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
For the record, Khalid is miming shooting himself in the mouth.
Actually, correction, brushing my teeth with a handgun.
With a
shotgun. I see.
it's very big in Italy as well. I want to say it's got a lot to do with the machismo culture there is over there as well.
Could you say more? It's more about pride that it's being, you know, proud about yourself, and that kind of comes off as face. Versus Malaysian and Asian style, it's, you know, how you represent yourself to the community versus, you know, like the machismo side is proud, you know.
Doesn't mean anyone's dumb when you call them out on small things and they're just,
I guess,
like,
it's pride, but in a different sense, I guess.
It
comes from a different place.
Yeah.
Because Italy is still, as much as everyone would like to say otherwise, it's still very much so you know, just Italy is Italians.
Yes.
Whereas Malaysia is Chinese, Indian, Malay. You've got the three. Whereas Italy would very much like to just still be Italians, and that's it. Because they're that kind of, big argument that probably not going to get into. But
then...
No, yeah. Despite its multiculturalism.
Yeah, but I would say, purely because Rome is an international tourist destination, by that fact, it's very cosmopolitan because of that, everyone who comes and visits. But I found Helsinki more cosmopolitan than Rome.
They're more accepting, Milan. It seems
what
like.
What does it mean anyway, cosmopolitan, really?
Like, oh, go.
I don't know.
Oh, it's cosmopolitan. Well,
cosmetology.
Interesting.
That's a study of makeup.
I'm kind of sinking here. Can you get your Google dictionary out, please?
I don't have my phone. No, remember,
cosmopolitan means a mixture of different cultures. You know, very new age, nouveau, urban.
I just think of shopping. Like if I hear cosmopolitan, it's like, oh, New York shopping. Something.
Well, for example, the fact
for the record, Johanny's moving his shoulders back and forth like he's strutting down a street somewhere with his hands full of shopping bags.
That's what I think.
Cosmopolitan.
Come on.
Well, but for example,
you're doing it.
New York is very cosmopolitan because it has such a big mishmash of cultures in it, and it kind of absorbs everything in it.
May I interject?
Yes.
I'll change it.
You may.
You'll change it.
Rome gets that cosmopolitan feeling, or that feeling of a little bit more of a mixing pot, purely because of its
location.
International, like it's a given international location. Go to Rome, you know, see everything there. But what I found with Finland, what I think, and sometimes I think very wrong things, although they're just not correct. I found Finland naturally a little bit more of a mixture and a melting pot than Rome is in terms of food, clothing. You can always pick an Italian out now. I think after being there, you can.
They're the ones that wear Pinocchio shorts in the winter and demand pasta everywhere they go. And I say this as an Italian, so don't yell at me.
Yeah, but you know, I think that could be the thing we were earlier talking about, that deal about Italian restaurants and go ahead.
Okay.
Italian restaurants and that pride thing coming into it, like maybe that's why the food culture is so great and intense in Italy, because of that certain pride. It's like, no, we must keep it something
traditional.
Like whatever you do, you pass on, and then it's like, for some reason, it's so much stronger than I'd say anywhere in downtown Helsinki or somewhere.
There's the definition of cosmopolitan. It's free from local, provincial, or national ideas, prejudice, or attachments at home all over the world. And right under it is an ad for Cosmopolitan magazine.
So that's free of attachments. That's precisely what Cosmopolitan is.
So that means...
I was completely wrong.
Free of identity. No.
Not necessarily wrong. It just means that instead of, like Italy, for example, like many cities in Italy where we hang on to our cultural roots very strongly and refuse to let go in spite of the fact that globalization is a thing and it happens all over the world and we should just kind of learn to accept it. Like, it's... cities that accept the fact that there are new ideas, new cultures coming in and giving you new things.
But then that's exactly, I think, what you said at the end. It's that they're so proud about their food, they've kept it strong in the face of globalization. They haven't changed.
Yeah.
It's given, actually, you know, it's brought more people to Italy. So in a way, it's, you know, strengthened that pride about their food and their customs.
And in the end, a very high... view of their own identity.
I will give Italians that. You know, in spite of it is an extremely multicultural place just by nature. Lots of different people from different cultures live there, but Italians are very proud of what they consider to be their culture and their cultural ideals, especially. Yeah. So they don't let go of those very easily.
And I think similar thing with, like, of course, Italy is known for a lot more things than Finland, I'd say, historically and now. Like, you mentioned Ferrari or auto racing or anything. It's like, yes, do you know that guy who drove the thing and thingamajiggy? It's like, maybe. But, like, it seems, again, very much generalizing and not really knowing any Italians. Or having ever lived there or even stayed for a long time.
Did you even visit
it? We should go to Italy sometime.
We should go to Italy sometime.
Yeah, anyway.
We've been there just for the record. Just for the record, they were there, and this has come up several times.
There's a history of national identity, which I think Finland doesn't quite have globally. Like, with Nokia, that was a big thing. When like, Conan O'Brien talked about Finland, like, everyone was on the YouTube and, like, sharing the links like crazy. It's like, dumb. As soon as somebody even mentions the name Finland or any town or city, people go like, oh, did you hear in this movie they said this and this? And then it wasn't a part of a conversation. It wasn't part of the plot. It was just like someone mentioned something. And it's, like, everyone knows those lines in movies. Like, you need something to hold on to that's global.
Yeah.
Right.
But the Finns are very concerned about what other people think
that's
about
a massive,
us.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Like, when foreigners come in here, they buy books about how, you know, satirical things, of course, but are based on stereotypes that are, in the end, mostly true. And one of those things is exactly that, what Maya said. Like, being concerned of what other people think. Which I think also feeds into obeying the law, especially when somebody else is there. So if there's a red light, no cars going on, but there's other people around, simplifying, of course, once again, a lot of people wouldn't cross the street.
Yes.
I wouldn't if there's a small child. I don't want to be a bad example.
You don't want to be that
child.
Girl?
Yeah.
That
and the
girl.
Mother is like, don't do what that lady's doing.
So in the end, thinking about what other
evil
people
Jay
think
Walker.
Of you.
Yeah.
But, you know, broad generalizations are an interesting thing, because, especially with identity, and of course, you could interpret this as being extremely racist, because...
But here we go.
It's like the thing, saying a racist joke and then going, I have a black friend, it's okay. You know, that kind of thing. Well, this, what this is especially
it's
with
okay
Malaysia. In Malaysia, I believe Malaysia in itself as a culture has no identity, and it's very fabricated, because following the exit of the British, long story short, the Malays didn't know where to go, so they attached to this Islam. We're attached to Islam. Islam is Malay. You know, Malays are Muslims.
Yeah.
The Chinese were the money people. The Indians were the laborers.
Yeah.
And then you extend that to Italy, and I would probably put that to the craftsmanship. Mm. It's not science for them with car racing. It's art.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side, I would move that to Germany, where it's all science, no art.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, if I'd have to say anything about Finland, it's probably...
You don't have to.
Yeah, I don't have to. No, but I'm like, you could say, you know, that being reserved is a good... Which is a nice thing when you know... Do I rather want to sit next to a Finn on the plane or an American? Probably a Finn. You know, because... No, you know, like... Even a drunk Finn, I think I'd take a drunk Finn over an American.
I don't know.
But that said,
depends how drunk I am.
But that said, if I extend that to American, is their principle of always wanting to be the best? Sometimes they just produce crap because it's just overly complicated. And then you take that to the Russians, who produce like very simple things and they work. So, you know, broad generalizations, identity. I mean, you could shoot holes through all of that, but
of course.
You know, but you know what? Yeah, that's how it is. That's reality.
That's reality.
According to Khalid.
Which should make a t-shirt for you, just says, let's reality.
That's reality.
Oh,
let's reality.
See, I think it's a hearing issue.
It could be.
Yeah. Because it's not a yoga situation.
Oh.
But One thing I want to ask.
Before you say anything more about yoga, we got to explain. Clint, most definitely.
Yeah, very objective when, with that statement.
Well, three people heard it.
You influence them. You're like the guy on the jury. Shush, let him explain. Time to Kill. Guilty.
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 Who thinks guilty? But it's not a bad thing. It's not an attack on you, really, per se.
I think it's because it's a question of nature versus nurture. It's Danny, adorable and Danny funny. Has nurtured our relationship by scolding me when I mispronounce things.
I do not.
So.
Yet you mispronounce.
Yeah, you still do it, so obviously
so anyway,
I'm not doing
to explain it. The yes. Yoga thing. Khalid was talking about some woman in America, I think, who won the yoga championship.
International.
Oh, international yoga championship. And well, okay, first of all, it was like, what? A yoga championship?
You don't compete
but,
in yoga.
But then, like, 2 seconds after we went, what? We're like, whoa, did you say international yoga championship? And then it was like, yeah, that's what you said.
Yogurt championship?
That's not like, yogurt, but yoger.
Yoger.
Like people say idea.
Idea. Yoger.
Like H and H.
Yeah, or herbs.
Herbs.
It's not herbs.
It's herbs.
Like
is it herbs?
Like Eddie Izzard said, because there's a fucking H in it. But then again, honor.
Exactly. Honor. And I don't say herbs. It just feels weird.
Yeah. Herbs.
Herbs.
I'm sure there's no right or
herb
wrong.
Herb is a name. Herb is a thing that grows out of the ground that's a plant.
But they're spelled differently.
Mm.
They're so spelled the same.
So is a dick a thing? A dick is a name.
Yeah,
but still they say they're both dick, not like dick.
Yeah.
Or ick.
One's a noun and yeah.
Yeah, because that rule doesn't work.
That rule doesn't but work.
Back to the cultural thing, since sure. You've explained my yoga issues.
Yoga.
Sure. Dick.
Okay. Herb. Like Herb Dean.
Herb.
Hi. Herb Dean.
I am Herb Dean.
That's Herb Dean.
Yeah, never mind. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Finland with nudity. When we were at the wool shed.
Yeah, let's do this story once more.
No. No, no, because I think it adds to maturity. I think Johanny and myself,
so
to the extent of going to an international school, and myself at some point going to a boarding school in Australia, when you're talking about doing the sauna nude with your friends. People are, even in Australia, are very uncomfortable with nudity.
This
at a young
is
age.
Evident.
No. At a young age in terms of, like, team showers or anything like that.
I would have thought completely different, but I guess I would.
American schools, as well, is very, you know, sanitized. The nudity is kind of a weird thing. And so is it here kind of custom that even at teenage years, you can go into a sauna with a group of people and all be naked.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and there's just nothing wrong with that.
No.
No, because it's it's culturally.
Yeah, I know that, but I understand the last time I was here, it's common for couples to do it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Sure.
But I was a little taken back with high school nudity.
That sounds so wrong.
No, keep in mind that he's keeping
it sounds like a porn category.
Yes, yeah. The FBI randomly is listening in on the conversation. High school
nudity. Do you want Asian girls, white girls, high school nudity? No, but that's it was like compared to ISKL. Where they treated sex ed with, like, oh my goodness, you
we
have
didn't have sex
ed. No, but even that was nudity in ISKL was considered, you know.
Yeah, of course, because lots of different people from different backgrounds.
The cultural things,
but.
You would never
go
put.
Ahead, finish it.
No.
Yeah.
But even in Australia, it's the same thing.
Mm.
It's nearly that nudity's deviancy, in a way.
Oh.
And that's what. I don't think like that, but that's what I think. That's the approach, this kind of mature approach to people's bodies that maybe other countries who don't have saunas should take.
It's just something that you grow up with. Like, if I asked all of my girlfriends to go in a sauna naked with me, they'd be like, okay.
Exactly.
But not because, just because they're not used to it, and they'd be like, that makes me uncomfortable because my body's my private thing. But that's just a thing that's...
It's quite... I've thought about this subject, actually. for a bit because a friend of mine from uni came to Finland last year Easter time, and we just me and him we went to the cottage, you know, drinking barbecue, and then came time to bathe, and of course there's no running water. You sauna is the place where you do it, not do it, but bathe.
Yes.
I'm beginning to feel like David Brent.
Yeah.
This is cutting myself off.
I gotta go.
Yeah. Anyway, so like, because I mentioned to him before, I was like, yeah, we will do the sauna thing, and yes, no clothes, and that's what happens, and we swim in the lake and
step on fishing hooks.
That shit. Yeah. And so while I'm already in the sauna, he's taking a piss outside, and then he yells, so was it a joke about the no clothes thing? Or he's like, yeah, no clothes. And everything went fine. He was fine. Had a good time. I made him swim in a much, much colder lake than you did. It was just when the ice had melted.
Oh.
But it was so refreshing. But anyway, back to the story. Later on, when he went home, and I was like, yeah, so I had a good time, you know. What did you know? Have you told people crazy stories and stuff? And it's like, yeah, everyone really liked it, but like, I got a few raised eyebrows about the nude sauna thing. It's like, and then his friends are these rugby people who get naked on the street for no reason type people. You know, I think we all sort of met those people at some point. And I was talking to some other people at our end of season rugby party, and they're like, maybe. Maybe the rugby nudity is like, oh, look at me, I'm crazy. This is so out of the ordinary. I'm a wild child.
Yep.
So therefore, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yep.
Because
like, it's not the same situation at all. And to come back to, well, same subject, but in a different way.
These boxes are killing
like
me.
Like, after living in Malaysia for 7 years and then uni, coming back to Finland, like, I definitely didn't feel the same going into a sauna then that I do now with anyone.
Obviously.
So if you are actually born with it and that's just the way things are and that's what you do, then it's not a big deal. But it's like, although I knew it wasn't a big deal, it was like in the back of my head, like, oh, I need to sort of prepare mentally.
I have a theory about the whole, like, I understand. Like, the whole nudity as a joke thing is just that, is a joke. Like, or you're drunk, or you're just like, wee, and you decide to streak and run down the street with your balls hanging out, whatever. But in a sauna, it's a lot more intimate, I suppose. You're in a closed space with other men, and you're not doing anything crazy, you're just maybe drinking a beer, you're having a talk. And I guess the normalcy of that situation for people who aren't used to it is strange, because it's not something you usually do naked. Like, you sit around, have a beer with your clothes on in a lot of countries. But just in Finland, it's very normal to go into a sauna, sit around with other people of your gender and drink beer, and but you're naked. So,
like, you're literally and figuratively naked at the same time.
Yeah, and I suppose to someone who isn't used to that, it's really, like, you feel really vulnerable because you just you don't have anything. So you're just like, just look at their faces, and you don't know where to look. I know because I've felt that
look,
way.
Do you look at them?
I don't look anywhere, but I know the stressor of, like, if you were a guy in, you know, a sauna with another guy, and you're just like, where do I look? Because I don't
know
what
to do. You've never been in a locker room.
No, where, I haven't. You're right. Exactly. Not with other guys, anyway.
But it's that pressure from wherever you're coming from. Your friend, obviously, who came to visit you, didn't the pressure wasn't so big of being naked with someone else to stop him from experiencing it.
Yeah.
But some people may, like, say someone from down south in the US, the Bible Belt or something nudity is kind of like seen in, like, in a perverse kind of way.
And overall it was just a completely different experience, so there's that.
Mm-hmm. Even so, like,
at this point, like, both guys and girls in the same sauna, that's not, like, not even all Finns do that, but, like, with old friends,
You might
you can
do.
Can do that when you're in high school. But
high school nudity.
Deviant.
But if you're all girls, like I used to play basketball, and if we would go to a sauna, that would be like weird if someone would wear a bathing suit or a towel or something. All the others would be like,
what's wrong with you?
What kind of rash do you have?
What are you hiding from me?
So it's like no question we would go naked.
But do you think that kind of creates a very civil attitude towards nudity, where it's not?
I think so.
You know, that skin. You know, I could only imagine it like one of the Japanese guys from Ice Kill, or any Japanese guy I played rugby with, being stuck into like you know a sauna.
Yeah.
Guys and girls, it'd be like.
But guys have in Japan they have like the onsen, like the. What are they called? The hot springs? They would go in there with other men.
That's
right?
That's a Japanese thing, but it's not so common.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah. But, Well, you put, an American dude in there who's never been like...
I was exposed to playing men's rugby for I know, I was 14. And it was just, I think, at Royal Selangor.
Mm.
And it was just like, you know, everyone's walking around naked kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for a Finn, it's really hard to understand the... like, for example, in the Super Bowl, when Janet Jackson's nipple
slipped out
and,
by accident.
And there was this huge scandal. And we were like,
it's a titty.
So what?
Human nature. It's
a boob. Have you never seen a boob?
Yeah.
And it's so weird, like, how you pointed the American perspective at things. Like, everything that they sell is, like, way more sex-driven than anywhere I've ever seen before. That I get the image that they wouldn't be so prudish.
If.
But maybe that's the difference. Like people who, well, here's another stereotype. Like say women who went to Catholic school or a place run by nuns. Mostly Catholic schools, I guess.
mostly Catholic schools, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had a tough time in the military run by nuns.
Militant nuns.
Amazing.
That's the next sex of terrorism coming up. Check it out.
I feel like you're right.
But yeah, like, that thing of being so repressed. Or is it oppressed? Repressed.
Repressed.
The stereotype being... a person like that, or a woman or a girl like that, then becomes a slut.
Yes.
But then that's subjective also to the culture that she re-enters into after that thing. But I've heard stories where that's completely true.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In boarding school, when I was in boarding school, being in an all-boys military boarding school, our sister school was a Catholic school, Catholic girls boarding school.
Mm.
And... I wouldn't classify it as sluts.
No.
Because at that time, 15, 16, your hormones are raging.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But looking back, you can see how girls could be, you know, wrongly subjected for being sexually active.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, categorized. But back then, it was just, oh, that chick's freaky. Or that chick's down for it.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
I mean? I'm not sure if I ever told you that story. One of my buddies, we used to have a house master. On a side note, at my boarding school, the newer guys were stuck in a bigger dorm. It's like, you know, I think 12 beds.
Mm.
And as you progressed and got more senior, you went up in rank, you had smaller rooms. And when I started there, a friend of mine, I'd just say he's a Lothario. Like, even that age, girls. And the housemaster used to come check beds at night. And he had a girl over from the Catholic school. And her toes were exposed underneath the blankets. And, you know, she had, like, every color on her toenails. And James was, you know, big guy, but the housemaster, he was able to roll over and cover her, but her feet were exposed. And the housemaster, I still remember to this day, like, flashed the light on the toes, and he had this look on his face of amazement, but at the same time, here we go again. Like, that kind of boys painting their nails. And it's as if he envisioned what James would turn out to be purely because of that. And he was so disgusted, but at the same time accepting. And for a long time, he would refer to James as like Mr. Colorful. And James would have no idea, you know.
Poor James.
Yeah, so I mean, but you know, it was a Catholic schoolgirl. And Because, yeah, it's just, it's very weird, you know? Or same thing with church choir boys. Like, if you're a choir boy, you've obviously been molested in your life some sort of parish priest or...
Yeah.
Fucking terrible conversation.
Took a very dark turn.
Very dark. It started with Finnish nudity again. It's Thank you, Aki.
High school nudity, FYI.
I had nothing to do with it.
No, he started talking. He started with, yeah.
When Clint was first here, he coached our rugby club, and then we had to go to a wedding, you and me, and then Clint, I told Aki, like, take care of him, make sure he gets to the right place, like, hold him by the hand, make sure he gets on the right bus, like, take him with you and shit, and I think Clint was, like, on the bed digging through his rugby bag or something,
yep, bending
and Aki just had taken a shower, or was just about to go into the shower, and then he's just wearing his towel around his waist, and then Khalid hears this voice like, "Are you uncomfortable with male nudity?" uncovered, and he looks up. He's like, "Oh,
that's funny." Okay,
like it was like that, yeah.
Less than a meter.
Yeah.
He's told me that story so many times, and he's like, "Aki," I'm like, "Oh, I met that guy." High five.
Another story about Aki and being nude. My bachelor party, not during, but like the morning after, like we went to the sauna at Maya's forest cabin cottage place,
Mookie.
And in the doorway you get these like ribbons kind of thing, so like the flies and mosquitoes maybe don't get in so easily,
mm-hmm.
but people just walk through, you know, that shit. And Galle, Maya's brother, was especially hungover. So he's just sitting inside of the cabin, like, just sitting there, like, looking into space, kind of, just looking into space, like, proper tractor beam, kind of, just there, stuck in some other dimension. And then, Aki's getting ready to go to the sauna, so he's walking from the veranda down, and right through those mosquito ribbons and right into the eye line, the eyesight of what Galle was staring at. And it's just like the first thing he realized, like coming back into this reality, was this guy's dick in his face. So you're not the first. Well, you might be the first, but you're not the last. You're not the only one.
That's hilarious.
I think because Aki is so disarming. He's, you know, a very nice guy. I remember because when you told me that I'd be spending time with Aki, like, you love Aki, he's such a nice kid, you know, and if I have to picture, like, the happy Finn, or, like, the equivalent of, like, the snowboarder, like, the surface, like, Finn, like, you know, like, laid back, I'd have to picture Aki.
He is very lovely.
You know, and then...
That's hilarious, though, that he did that to you.
And then Aki was also one of the founding members of Space Babies RFC.
Space Babies. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Chris Rowell,
one of them. We were on the...
Shout out to Chris.
Chris, yeah. He's still here, yes?
He's just gone back for some months, but I think he'll be back.
He's studying still? No, working. Oh.
He was just finishing his thesis, so I don't know what's going on.
Nice guy, Australian guy. Kiwi Chris, right? That's what his name was?
Yeah. We actually handled this in podcast number 2.
Oh.
About his... Is it Australian Chris or New Zealand Chris?
I have to go back.
Like, what was the...
Yes. Did you find out?
He's a Kiwi originally, but then for some reason he started going for the Wallabies?
Aussie.
Or the other way around. I'm horrible. I don't know.
No, you're really nice.
No.
You're lovely.
But hey, just, you. I'll give you 7.5-8 minutes to go through your rugby background, because I'm sure mostly rugby people will be listening to this.
Okay.
From age 0 onwards, do we need to make popcorn?
No. I'll go sequentially. Like, you know,
I would hope so.
I'll go backwards. I can...
Don't do that.
My rugby background. Okay.
Also, just your background as a whole, so people understand.
Okay. My full name is Adam Khalid Kayum bin Dato Haji Abdul Kayum.
Haji.
Yep. Haji. I couldn't, you know, you can't choose your family or your name. Or you could just hope that your mother would give you a different name from your brother. But I guess I can't have those things in my life. So, for people listening, my first name is the exact same name as my brother. So we're both Adam. My mom did that, I think, out of fear, because my father was going to name it some horrendous name. And so then they agreed for me, Khalid, and my brother Shahir. So I refer to it as my brother. My mother is not very creative. Had 6 months to come up with a different name. Came up with Jack. I was born in Malaysia.
But not Jack.
Yeah, but not Jack. Born in Malaysia, then moved to Australia pretty much as early as possible. I think I was 6 months when I went to Australia.
And your mom's Australian?
Yes.
Like proper Australian?
Proper Australian. True blue Aussie. Mm. And so my father wanted us to be born, but then my mom took us back to Australia and grew up a very typical Australian kid, you know, went to the beach, did surf life-saving like little kids, you know. Was never particularly good at any sports, really, and rugby kind of fell into my lap.
When was the first time I actually played? Because I don't think I even know this.
Under six. Under six, okay. What they call like Walla rugby.
Right.
But it was rugby league.
Okay.
And at those stages, very much you run, you pick up a little ball on a little field. And I did it in Bondi Junction, a place in Sydney. And then from there, played rugby. Well, moved to rugby union.
Mm-hmm.
Played it in primary school. And Australia, Sydney specifically, is very tribal with sports. You can go to some areas and they don't even touch rugby union, especially because it's a private school thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when my mom wanted me to come back to Malaysia, came back to Malaysia, went to ISKL, where Yohani went to school and graduated, same with Daniela. They didn't have rugby at the time for middle school.
Mm.
And so I was in the first middle school rugby program.
And that was you, how old?
7th grade. You were in 8th grade.
Oh, that's like 13, 14?
13, 14.
13.
And I'd never played sevens before. Yeah. It was, you know, it was 15s again.
Yeah.
And then stayed till 9th grade, and then I was misbehaving a little, so I went to a boarding school and played rugby there, and then came back to high school and played more rugby. And I think our rugby education was quite different than most people, purely because of our practice schedule.
Mm.
We practiced 5 days a week, tackled 3 days a week,
yeah.
And then sometimes played men's teams.
Yeah.
And played local teams. Played
30-plus weather.
Yeah, 30-plus weather.
Humidity. Through the sky.
I think I would probably just die if I had to play a sevens game in Malaysia again. And then I kept playing after that and coaching. And my biggest learning experience for rugby is when I went to the US and I was that typical guy who had played rugby all his life but never coached it.
Right, yeah.
And I was really bad. Like, I was a terrible coach my first year there because I assumed I would be talking to guys like how I played with other guys in Australia or yourself. And out of everything of playing rugby, that's the best learning experience I've ever had, regardless of what I've done. I went back to Australia, played seconds Subbies League for New South Wales University. Then I got my coaching level papers done, and I worked at the Waratahs Talent Identification Program, TIP. We had nothing to do with the Waratahs, except they gave us free clothes. And we were part of the Waratahs community.
Yeah.
And then went back to KL at that point, where I stalked Danny for a little.
What year about was that?
2010?
Yeah.
2010. Oh, I'm sorry. Then I came here to Finland, and, you know, Johanni was nice enough to tell the Helsinki guys that I would like to help out with the coaching, which was a lot of fun. Got to meet a lot of good guys, good group. And then went back to Malaysia, coached, and played rugby. Tried to go for the national team, but it just didn't work out with timing and schedules. And then I played my last rugby game 2 years ago, actually, probably next week. Had a really bad concussion. Lost all color. My eyes pretty much went black and white. And I haven't played since then, but I'm probably moving more into coaching. I'm really fascinated, not in just coaching rugby, but in the skill of coaching.
Yeah.
Because I think because I've been in such... Myself being a terrible coach and being part of a team that had terrible coaches.
I think you're selling yourself short, though. Being a terrible coach. Maybe you were at some point.
Yeah. I look at it as always a work in progress.
Yeah. But, it's interesting what you said about being a terrible coach when you first had to coach.
Mm.
But, trying to explain stuff to people makes you a better person at understanding the thing itself.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like that old saying, however it goes, you know.
It was, yeah, it's interesting you said that because sometimes you don't know you're wrong until you look step back and take a better picture. Yeah. And sometimes when you're there, it can be harder for you to see it. And what I mean by that is when I was coaching in the U.S., the team I was with was a terrible coach. It was pretty much, you know, dead man shoes, filled dead man shoes, or who was there the longest.
Yeah.
And it was very old style rugby. And so the techniques were old and the mentality was old. It wasn't, you know, positive coaching methods. And sometimes terms like that get played down into some sort of, you know, PC kind of, you know, everyone's a winner kind of thing.
Yeah.
But when you take it to guys who are competitive and putting their bodies on the line, they want to be in an atmosphere where it is fun to learn.
Mm.
No one wants to train in a really shit situation.
Yeah.
Where they're ridiculed or criticized. And I thought purely because I was doing that differently, or not in the same way those other guys were doing it, I was much better.
Mm.
But it wasn't the case. I was just equally as terrible, but in a different way.
But you did end up coaching the team that won the New York State Championship.
Yeah.
So that's something.
Yeah, one of the few things in terms of I hold very dear to my heart in terms of rugby experiences, because I think that's why I identify with you guys and your success this year is you came from nothing and were able to pull stuff together and really accomplish something.
And that's, I gotta say, that is in a massive, massive way down to coaching.
Hmm.
Coach we have now, second to none, of course, Smithy from Haskell, probably greatest ever, just because that was the first big time introduction to rugby, but still. Like, definitely the situation where another club formed and a lot of people went that way, you're left with nothing. So then you got to go, do you persevere? Do you step up?
Mm.
And then you get awesome leadership with that as well. As well as Soviet being captain. That is fucking...
But he's that type of leader you need.
Great equation. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic, yeah.
And it's funny because sometimes you have all the parts there, but they don't necessarily work together at that time. But at some point, you change out one part for another.
Yeah.
Another player goes to another club. Another player steps in, and it really, unless you're in it, you can't see how awesome it is.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like,
and you get like before the change, like you wouldn't be able to say, here are the things we need to change. Like, we need to get rid of players X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. And we need to get a coach who is kind of like B, to make it really weird to explain without naming names, of course. But after the fact, it's so easy to point out the things that made it change for the good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, like, in the moment, I think the really, really brilliant people in the moment can actually say, we need to change this and this.
Mm.
And that's why a lot of times people go, oh, you're wrong, you're a dick. You're a fool. Mm. You're wrong. Because, of course, like we know, hindsight's always perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Sorry. No, very true, man. It's sometimes the people who notice it too, sometimes, especially in a really negative atmosphere, can be seen as the problem. But in reality, it's really hard. There's a dynamic where you have to toil away in the background and really work to make a positive change. Even though you're correct, needs to change, this sucks, or stuff like that. But you don't want to be showing up to practices all the time hearing people saying, oh, this fucking sucks and this is crap. And,
you know,
people rag on Americans, but one thing they do is they will speak up if they don't like something.
Yeah.
And that was a huge learning curve. But it's also interesting you point Smithy out, because many prototypical types of, I'd say, a good coach comes from Smith.
Mm.
Yeah. And you want to explain Smith? You can explain Smithy.
I was think I was 15, playing soccer or football, as most people probably know it. We had three seasons in school. So you had, first season was like what, soccer and what else was
cross country?
Cross country was like last. I don't fucking know. I've got a terrible, terrible memory. Like I've said before.
I know I never did anything first season.
Soccer and something. Second season was rugby, basketball, maybe cross country running then. Yeah, it must be, because the last season was track.
Track and softball.
Softball and
badminton.
Badminton.
Maybe volleyball was in the first season.
Volleyball was there. That's right. So, sort of, Chad. I think, during some exchange or tournament or something for soccer, Smithy came up to me and he's like, "Do you like to hit people?"
Yes, I do.
At the time, I was way more, or way less, confident, more timid, kind of just, I figured out that I could be a good goalkeeper, like I was, I thought. And then, you know, he comes along, he's like, "Do you like to hit people?" I was like, I don't know, sir.
And not stroking your honey's ego, because you just have to say it out loud. We have a good friend named Gail, who's French, and Gail was pretty much relegated to riding the bench all 4 years of playing soccer in high school because he wanted to be goalie. And he could never, because Johanny was always goalie.
Yeah, but to be honest, there weren't many goalies there.
So. Yeah, but to be honest, Gail was also, even he admits now, maybe goalie wasn't the best thing for him. You know, short French guy, your little arms. Like short arms. Make sure to tag Gail in this.
Little arms.
Gail's athletic, but just not, you know, soccer was nothing. Mm. And then at the same time, Johanny played a lot of basketball.
With his monkey arms.
And so Johanny was on the radar for basketball coaches, and Smith, rightly so, swooped on Johanny and brought you into the rugby fold.
Yeah, and I still remember like the couple of first times that I've actually touched a rugby ball. It was Matt Hamilton, you, and a whole bunch of those. All the cool kids with Hamilton's crew, like maybe Mark King and
Shorts.
A whole bunch of Australians from around, like, we're playing jump ball in a ring. Like, you throw the ball to someone, you're meant to jump into the air, and before you land, you're meant to pass it on to somebody else. So that's what you do. And I still remember, like, Hamilton would do, like, little drop kicks to people. Mm. Like, just tiny, in the circle, just drop it, boom, just kick it on. So I tried that. And then I'd sort of pass the ball. And I remember you saying, it's like, "Hey, man, you should try rugby." I was like, "I don't know." And
I should have said it's ice hockey of the field.
Because I still remember, like,
without a stick or a puck.
Because I was so uncomfortable being anything but a background person. Like, no confidence. Like, I'd look at the varsity players at the time, like Jamie's older brother.
Paul.
Yeah, Paul. Guyan. And all these guys, like massive dudes to me, just like fucking going out. That was before it was, it wasn't even an IASA sport. It wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Before.
It wasn't like a thing. It was just like people playing because some coach, which was Smithy, I guess, at the time, really.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Smith.
Still then, like doing it, maybe getting some club games with Malaysian teams. But yeah. 3 years I played, and Smithy's trainings were always really, really tough.
Hmm.
Always tough, but he never took people out to ridicule them individually, ever. It was always a massive team mentality. I think that's why, although we only won, well, under him, the team won it twice. I was only part of it once, but still.
We medaled every year with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I remember when we got bronze, like, everyone's just depressed as shit. Like, everyone is just we, you know, thought really could do so much better. And I, you know, I don't even know what I'm talking about, because there's so many tangents I could go on.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the best ones as a coach, Smithy, was because he was, although he was really demanding and put us to work, it was like, there's so much positivity, though,
yes,
coming from him. It's kind of like if you take Ross from Friends, something Schwimmer?
Yeah,
David Schwimmer. David Schwimmer's character in Band of Brothers, it's like, that was him, but much nicer, and didn't make people do ridiculous punishments.
Mm.
But still, you know, demanding but supportive at the same time.
Yeah.
That's what, like, I had a lieutenant in the army who was like that. Like, everybody hated him because he had a bad reputation of being a dick. But, like, you do things the right way, you work.
Yeah.
And then, in the end, well, objectively, he wasn't a softie. But, like, once you knew how the thing worked, it was like, yeah, he respected you once you saw that you put in the work.
Yeah,
that type of thing.
I think what's interesting about that stuff with leaders is that they're kind of conservators of principles and standards. And I think people don't realize that at the beginning, because everything they do is a shock to their life, you know?
Yeah, especially like me just starting rugby then.
Yeah.
Like, not even fucking know what to do. And then all the other shit that goes with it.
And I think that's what great was about Smith was that he could motivate you, but not always in the very typical kind of overdone way of purely positive. But he wasn't negative about it.
Yeah.
He wanted you to do more for yourself because you know you could.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to hate fitness. I still hate fitness.
Yeah.
But I was always a little bit more fearful with fitness with Smith because I feel like I would let him down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, you know? Exactly.
Some teams, you know, myself and Henry, last time I was here, you know, Henry and I used to just run together very far back behind everyone.
Yeah.
But we didn't feel bad about being far back. But with Smith, it was like, fuck, I got to be at the front.
Yes, that's a very good point. That's a really good point. Like,
and you just don't want to let him down.
Yeah, that's what good leaders do.
Like, yeah.
No matter how old, how young, how whatever, it's like you see the fairness and you want to, like, I don't know. It's weird to put into an equation, really.
Yeah. I think
there's definitely something like something about the coach not deserving my shitty effort.
Mm. Yeah,
in a way.
I can remember never having a boring practice with Smith. Mm. There was always practice, even as doesn't matter if we knew we were going to get flogged or do some crazy running, sprinting. Because it was International Day. You generally, doesn't matter your fear of practice, it was still the thing you look forward to most at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, it was pretty easy with Smith, too, because having that kind of like role model or kind of example that he would do everything he would ask of you.
I was just about to say, like, literally, he would run all the runs that people did, all the physical stuff he would do.
The bear crawls, the sprints.
I'm sure that was a massive part of it, actually. Good thing you pointed that out, too.
Because I've worked with coaches who have subject knowledge of it and are demanding, but they don't come off the best way in asking the demands. And then your first thing is like, look, you know, like, who are you to say?
Yeah.
And I try to do that to the best of my ability, but I take a different tack than Smith with coaching in that, obviously, sometimes in 15s, you can't run the drills. You can't run drills with it. I would, people might disagree, but say like HRC, Helsinki Rugby Club, versus a Melbourne Turbos or some sort of like subbies club, there's a level of experience there where I have to be a part in the drill, explaining the drill, and not just being a coach, but being a skills coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Worse than being like Smith wore many hats and he did like excellent, you know, a job at it. But I can't run all the drills in 15s when you have to set up the drills.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and I think that's what made him also such a great coach. He wore all those hats.
Yeah.
Which is great. I mean,
Plus, you look at the amount of games he got us as well.
Mm.
It wasn't just, oh, we practice and then the big tournament at the end of the season comes up and then we do whatever. But like, we'd have proper games against men's teams, the under-19s national sevens team,
mm-hmm.
all that shit.
And we also never lost.
Yeah, exactly.
I think after you left, we lost, so I blame you, though.
Well, we lost when I was there.
At home?
At home, we didn't.
No. Yeah, never. At home, we never lost.
Yeah.
It's like Fortress ISKL.
Yeah.
On a side note about that, I was on Facebook.
I was on Facebook. Yeah. All right.
Okay, that's good. Maybe I'll see you there sometime.
Yeah.
And there was some memorial to the Bali bombings.
Yeah.
And some in the rugby coaches group I'm part of, and some kid put up a picture of JIS B team at the tournament we played at, obviously at ISKL.
Yeah.
It was like flooded out. Do you remember that time? It poured out.
Yeah.
And the coach and one of the players died in Bali.
Oh.
And it was just a very small world. Like, I didn't expect seeing this rugby coaching group with 3,000 members. And, you know, this kid would post up a photo. Like, you could see the goalposts that are right next to the car park. And you could see what used to have the high jump.
Yeah.
So, like, clearly, I was like, oh, and it was just like a blast from the past. Oh, terrible wording. But it was a shock to the system to see it. I mean, But okay, how about this? Actually, this rugby wise, where do you see yourself rugby related in 5 years? Hopefully. Concerning everything that's coming up.
Yeah. Hopefully, still playing. I mean, I got a massive boost 2 years ago when all the little injuries stopped happening, and then a big one happened. But, like, before that, I started feeling really good again. Like, for a long time, I was cruising. I wasn't really motivated. At the end of the day, I didn't give a shit. I almost said homeless. I was jobless, unemployed for a very long time. So that was a massive thing. It just, like, couldn't stay positive. And then things just happened at the right time. Got a nice job in a new field I never dreamed of having a job in, really. And, well, I think that gave me a lot of faith, like, I can still do this.
Mm.
And, like, that brought on me joining the national team camps again. And brought on a lot more confidence.
Mm.
And, like, it was a weird thing, like, just, like, hanging with those guys in training is like, hey, wait a minute, you know, I can still do this.
Yeah.
It's weird because, like, I've always had a complex of me being never good enough for some reason, or too small, or too whatever.
Mm.
It's weird. Like, I don't know. I really don't know where it comes from. But, like, confidence is a massive thing for me. Like, it's really volatile.
Mm.
And, you, like I said before, like, you only see it after it's gone, or, like, after the fact. You can analyze stuff that's... Oh, sorry.
Nearly you just smacked...
choked my wife.
Just casual.
But, yeah, 5 years, I think that's more or less the limit. Like, if I'm still feeling like I am now in 5 years, yeah, I'll fucking play. But if I'm not, then hopefully somehow involved in the board or coaching or whatever, but in the end, I'm a terrible coach.
Like, right now, gonna get exposed to it.
Right now, we got Alistair, who's awesome. Bam coaches American football here, who actually studied coaching, and he's fucking really good at it.
Mm.
He's gonna be coaching the ladies, I think, this season quite a bit. He coaches us with the sevens, which under him, like, it's the best seven sessions I've ever had. Like, it just makes sense.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, that's really, like, really awesome.
Really simple shit, but it's like, oh, yeah. Boom, yeah. It just clicks. Like, all the little drills, and it's just a couple of drills, get the system right, and then drill people on that, and it's like, all right, good enough. Like, you don't need to go like, oh, here's a passing drill. No, you do the drill of the system that you're meant to run on a sevens field.
Yeah. It's, I'll probably have to say, just from what you said, is that obviously Alistair and Bam see coaching as a responsibility, not as an entitlement, because they've been here longer, because they are from a country or they played in a supposed team, my hackles always go up when someone introduces themselves, especially in rugby clubs, as their pedigree.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
They say, oh, I mean, you asked me before and I explained, but, you know, when I met a certain person, I won't name names, and the first thing out of his mouth was, blah, 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 my background is semi-representative, you know, kind of thing. And it's just like, you know, we're not comparing dicks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's like, look, man,
if you can coach, you can coach. If you can't, it'll be evident at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And that makes a huge difference when you have coaches like that, because coaching in itself is a position. Just like prop, hooker, halfback, you have to be good at it.
Mm.
And, you know, I think there's more subtleties to coaching than is in most positions.
And it's definitely more more difficult in a country like this, where the rugby isn't at a level at all where, well, anywhere where they played rugby for a bit, like even for kids, it's more structured.
Mm.
Like here, it's just like, take whatever you can get. And whatever you can get, if those guys step up and you realize, like, holy shit, it's a completely different ballgame, really, then you just got to be fucking grateful.
Yeah. And it's interesting what you say about Bam, because of some of the complaints he had about rugby in the UK or of that nature, the tribal nature. I wouldn't say complaints, but that is so evident, even in Australia, you know. It's I think people who have a very honest transition to coaching are usually the better coaches, because they're not trying to make up ground on anything.
Yeah.
Like for me, there's a clear defined where you say, you know, you're worried about not performing. I think I got lazy and tired of the fact of worrying about being injured. And I think that's just a testament to my personality.
Yeah.
A warrior. And so coaching was a way for me to still be a part of the game. And but not completely missing it at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, I do, you know, I used to love scrummaging and stuff like that. But, you know, time goes on, and also physical fitness is a big thing. But at the same time, I could still have enjoyment being involved with rugby without worrying if I'm going to pull up at the end of the day and just be, you know, just trying to get through the game versus living in the game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like, if you're just living for surviving, basically, then you're a lost cause, like, which I think I was, really, for several years, a couple of years back. It was just like, right, I'm doing this because I like doing this, and if I don't do this, I don't know what else I'll do.
Mm.
Especially being unemployed, it's like, you really got there. No options. Like, you know, what the hell do you do?
It's the stimulus of, like, I think if you're competitive, you want to be constructive, and I've been there, unemployed, and you kind of feel like you start losing this ability to be constructive with things. You're not accomplishing anything, so you're not then, you don't feel like you're contributing in any way, and it's a vicious kind of like cycle. I mean, there's other kind of more vicious cycles, but that's one of them. I understood that. I'm not doing something, I'm not, you know, getting something done. And it's so frustrating because it's like out of your control.
Yeah.
And you want, in the back of your head, you want to believe that self-help bullshit. You know, you always hear like, you can do great things, you know, and stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, but we have responsibilities and social pressures and stuff like that. I mean,
to that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I remember how relieved you were when you found the job you liked. Not even getting the job, employment, but finding one you actually really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Which is important, hugely important. Yeah,
it doesn't feel like a task, but I can still do it well. Type of thing.
But sometimes people make it feel like a task.
People make it feel like a task, especially people from beep.
France.
Have to beep that out.
I thought I was going to self-censor, but no.
It's true. It went through my censor board, and it was okay.
Well, I mean, now I feel dumb for just making that beep noise, but yeah. Because I have good friends from France, good teammates, good ex-teammates, all these shit.
Yeah, we have good French friends. But it seems like French people, it's not like, you know, you can say so many things about people. You're like, oh, he's such a fucking dick or anything. But then it's just like, oh, he's French.
I guess. We're coming back to that stereotype of different countries. And I think it still holds true. Yeah, why not?
And this is not racist, but.
Yeah. But it's also like, you know, going to school with 130 different nationalities, where a Korean guy would call a white boy kimchi, or, you know.
Kwilo.
You got kids from Namibia calling kids from South Africa racist but smiling at the same time about it. I mean, it is our school upbringing.
Yeah.
We're not racist people. I know that.
Yeah.
I know that. And my partner knows that.
Hello.
People say fucked up shit. All the time, of course.
But it's, we say this in reference to our friends. Yeah. So like a Gael, a Frenchman. You know?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, whoever, stupid American, or Dario, lazy Spanish person.
Yeah.
I mean,
Jesus, where the fuck's Dario in these days?
Yeah, where is Dario?
I spoke to him, I think, two years ago.
Really?
Yeah, Facebook. When I say speak, I use the term very loosely. And he wanted to be an architect, so he went to like 7 years of architecture school.
Oh, dear
and
God.
Then quit.
Yeah, exactly.
What? Seriously?
<It's Dario.
laughs> Seems right. Perfect.
Oh, no. What is he doing now?
And his response was, I'm pretty sure, when I asked him what he's doing, he says, taking it easy.
Sounds amazing.
Taking it easy.
I'm sure he's got something going on.
But I think he's in good health and everything like that.
I wish we could have seen Seb at the Stockholm Turns.
Yeah, but
never got back to you.
No, never.
What was that?
Seb
was a guy we played rugby with. Bit of a man child, gentle giant.
Huge dude. Icelandic,
Swedish. He has a perfect Viking, right?
In a way. Yeah.
And
really good dude.
Yeah, really
awesome,
good.
Awesome guy.
Yeah, really just a nice bloke.
Yeah.
And sometimes he got made fun of it because of it, you know. P-zone, like, oh, my brother bought a P-zone. What the hell's a P-zone, Seb? P-zone, you know the PlayStation? PS1.
Oh,
P-zone.
Oh, I get it.
So yeah, P-zone. It's like, holy shit, Seb. You remember when he broke his toe?
Yeah,
he broke his toe and he kept playing.
Was the soccer tryouts and he missed the ball, I guess, and he kicked Sam Dauber in the shin and broke his toe. To the extent where the bone was actually sticking out of his toe.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. And he was kind of just like... And then he had to walk around school with his, like, Scandinavian sandals and his toe brace. Right? Like a wrapped up...
Jesus sandal.
The Jesus sandal. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I mean, it was a pity he couldn't meet up. I mean, try to keep in contact with him. But we were pretty fucked from that tournament, too.
Mm. I was running top. I pinched my nerve in my back again.
Yeah.
I had to roll off the pitch.
We were pretty drunk.
Bitch or pitch?
Roll off a bitch.
I just had a drink, so I kind of softened the pee.
Yeah.
Roll off and off a bitch.
Well, the first time. the first time.
Again, I just had to roll off
just
the bitch.
I had to roll off the bitch.
Well, I guess you had a good tournament then.
It was really good.
No, if I
traveled to the party place in the luggage compartment of the bus.
We're like, where is your
With honey? My bad back, and like, people kept on piling in. I was like, oh! I'm slightly claustrophobic. Yeah. Like, oh, get off me! Get off me! And I couldn't move because of my back.
That sounds like it.
Oh, God. That was a good time.
To clear up, we went to the Stockholm Tens in 2010 as part of a combined team of Helsinki and Bergen Rugby Club.
Bergen Red Nuts.
Bergen Red Nuts, yes.
Knuts. So nuts.
And
Knuts.
Johanni and I traveled there and... We went up in the hotel and then we were able to get some of our friends' room keys. And
room number only.
No.
Or key.
Yeah, remember we used their toilet?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And so two Andres in the same room. One was a South African pilot. Flew for an
too
oil
tall,
company.
Too
yeah.
Tall.
Yeah. And then Andre Slater, who we also went to school with and played rugby.
Norwegian Rugby National.
Norwegian Rugby National, yeah. And...
Also trained under Smithy.
Yeah, also trained under Smithy. both Johanny and I defecated extravagantly in their toilets.
Oh my god.
Made a mess, I did what I could.
Yeah, made a mess of their rooms and then blamed housekeeping, to which South African Andre really got angry. And he called housekeeping and it was filthy with him. And we can't even do justice to his accent being a South African.
Remember when he did the beer bong?
Yeah, and it exploded.
It splattered. Like, it was so much pressure that he couldn't keep his mouth on it and then splattered on the wall behind him. He's like, oh, that was really strong. Yeah. You have the video.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for you to upload
that
video.
Actually, I can... I know I have it. I watched it.
Just upload it, man.
I will. And we lost it in the room. And then there was the black American guy who slept with the concierge, Sheldon. And we're making fun of him because he had no legs the next day in the game.
Plus, he was late like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, he had some booty.
And so, but back to the point, Johanny pinched the nerve again. And this is another tangent. I remember the first time you pinched the nerve. And you have to understand that Johanny doesn't complain about nearly anything.
Anything, yes. It's
physically, he doesn't
it's
complain.
True.
Physically, he doesn't complain about ailments. But, like, logical things he'll complain about. He things of the mind he'll complain.
And he has the man flu sometimes.
Yes.
But that's different. I never get the man flu, I just get the flu. I hate when people say, oh, I have the man flu. Fuck you.
I have man flu.
It's, okay.
Just be a bitch or man up.
Yeah.
You have the flu and you're sick.
And so, Johanny was, we were coaching, I think, the high schoolers at that time. And you went down like a bag of bricks in the middle of a passing drill.
I was like playing scrum half.
Yeah.
Like they're doing some kind of passing drill. So I just kept on twisting my body. All of a sudden I was like, oh, it doesn't feel so good.
I'm going
to Johanny had to roll off the field like you would roll a carpet. Like just over and over like that.
Oh, no.
And I felt
I don't know how I got home. Obviously you took me home, but I don't know how I got
home
all the way.
And then that's happened a lot in your life. You don't know how you get home. But and he was bedridden. Like I would come and give him painkillers.
Yeah.
And
my parents would go to a Chinese restaurant and like bring me back some food from the Chinese restaurant. I was like,
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Like if I had to pee, I'm sitting on the sofa eating the food, like watching TV. I'd have to go down and pretty much roll and crawl to the toilet. That was the worst pain.
That
like,
sounds about right.
I don't have too many injuries, but like a knee thing, a couple of ankle things. That's pretty much it. But like that was
pinched nerve.
Is that in the house where?
No, it's an apartment.
Oh, it's an apartment.
It was like the penthouse.
Ampanghilir.
The Ampanghilir is where I've been.
Yeah.
With the swimming pool and the courtyard.
Yeah. Oh, shit, dude.
And so...
I had to roll all the way out the
way. Yeah, my God, that was just... And I just... And you had your arms out, like, flat. You were like Superman on the ground. And it's...
Dude.
Until you've had a pinched nerve in your back or some sort of lower back, upper back injury, you kind of... It's like laughing to reduce your own sorrow at the person. Like I'm laughing because I feel really bad for you, and I don't know how to get through this. But
it was tough.
Yeah, it was tough to watch you. And then, so back in Sweden, the same thing happened again.
Tough to watch you.
Yeah,
but not as bad, bro.
Not as bad. Yeah, but definitely not good.
Yeah, that was. Oh, yeah. I've never. My injuries tend to flare up, kind of just. In really just terrible times. Not game times. I seem to survive.
Yeah.
But it's either before a trip, during a trip, sometimes right after a trip.
Yeah.
Randomly.
Yeah, exactly. I've never had a massive impact or some incident where shit happens, really.
Mm.
It's more over time and then you realize, oh, yeah, that part of me isn't good.
Mm.
And then go to the doctor and you realize, oh, you're fucked.
Yeah. Like wear and tear. Like with the whole NFL tackling and head trauma thing. And, you know, I thought about us, you know. I would have to say, if we played a game in a week, we'd probably tackle 3 times a week.
Yeah.
Easy, right?
Yeah.
Always tackling.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's really
hard. And that age, we could just recover.
Yeah, you're way more limber. It's
but
unbelievable.
Still, you're still doing damage at yourself.
Like now, Like, I don't want to go out and get shit-faced, because I feel like shit. And more like right now, we're drinking, it's fine.
Mm.
But, like, because you hit it hard when you go out.
Yeah.
Because you've got some weird party adrenaline going, like, yeah, we can do this.
Take shots!
Wine shots!
Yeah. Wine shots!
Or whatever it is. And then the next day, just like, oh, I'm not a child anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not a child.
It takes a longer time to recover. Everything takes long. And then you're like, oh, you get old. With age comes wisdom. And it's just like...
Fuck off. With age comes pain.
I think with age, I would definitely not want the slow recovery times.
Mm. Testosterone.
Yeah, testosterone. Growth hormone.
Yeah, why not? But I think we're at the threshold of how long we want to actually talk for.
Mm.
So I'm sorry to the ladies who have been quiet for the last half an hour because we've been talking other crap.
That
we've
did.
Been fine.
Yeah.
We've been checking our Facebooks conscientiously.
Yeah.
Yes.
Conscientiously?
Yes.
That's a word.
Yeah, I know it's a word. Most people are like, yeah, I check Facebook. It's like, yeah, we've been checking Facebook conscientiously. I'm getting dagger eyes right now.
No, you're not. This isn't the dagger eyes.
It's the drunk tired eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what it is, actually.
But you'll be in Italy in just a short while, and you'll be making reindeer stew for all of Daniela's family.
Mm-hmm. We need to get the proper recipe off you.
And beer.
And burr.
And beer.
Burr. Yeah. Burr and...
Put beer in the...
Potatoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, remember?
Yeah. But I just thought, like... We have to bring finished beer.
No.
No.
That's just beer. A beer.
Yeah. All right. Any last words? Do you want to say anything?
Yes. I'll go first.
Okay.
Can I go first?
Yeah.
Or do you want to go first?
You go first.
Thank you for an awesome, awesome trip. It's like, not trying to sound like a Hallmark card, but it was what the soul needed. So thank you very much.
It is what the soul needed.
Yeah. And I know sometimes you're a bit worried about the pace of activities we were doing, if it was enough, but this trip was perfect.
Cool.
It really was.
Good.
We went by it, you know, at a really good pace and one thing at a time. And
we saw some things.
It was a holiday, which was different because I think we've been on a lot of trips together. And it wasn't a holiday.
Yeah.
All these countries splashed.
An exercise and death.
Too much diarrhea and vomit doesn't make it a holiday.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes, you're right.
And so we're on the up.
Next year, a 5-star hotel.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
With Evian tap water, pretty much. And
no tap water, just Evian.
That's an oxymoron
just
if
Evian.
I ever heard
yeah.
it. Although, maybe not.
No.
Bum, 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 bum.
No,
so,
I agree.
So it's on record. Tap, tap, tap. I had a fucking awesome time.
Cool.
And I thank you so much for just letting us have an awesome time.
I kind of wish, because, like, at some points the weather was super, super cold, which means
amazing.
Up north, because Jonas actually put up a little Facebook thing, like, they're up north, they're watching the Northern Lights. Like, we could have done that.
Oh,
but
nice.
Then again, because
no.
you never know by the time, plus the
yeah.
money, is it
yeah.
worth the risk? Unless we actually spent the entire holiday there, then
yeah.
it would have been a different thing.
Yeah.
But we did build a snowman three quarters of the way, and then the next day
could have pinched
it
nose
died.
Again.
It melted.
Plus, God knows how much.
Four. It was like plus four, and it had melted like
yeah.
all fucked up.
Would you like to say anything?
Yes. Thank you for the wonderful trip. It was truly wonderful, and we love being with you guys, and we love you guys so much. So thank you for having us in your lovely home and taking us to all these lovely places. And yeah.
Interestingly enough, they might think we're a swinger couple because when we apply for your visa, every other ticket has their name on it.
That is also true.
Cambodia,
but that's
Italy,
okay.
Care.
I remember this guy.
So they'd be
okay.
like, who are these Mayanians?
Thank you for coming, and the next time you will come, it's
mm-hmm.
going to be summer. So we
that's
will
damn
see
right.
And then there'll be...
there will be.
Yeah. Which
will be
awesome.
There will be happy times happening.
And before you come here, I'm sure we'll see you somewhere else.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yes, of course. We'll have to
in
organize
Europe.
That.
Because I think it's an...
yes, in Europe.
Oh, yes, that. Oh, I forgot about that.
Sorry. Jesus Christ, you're the worst. Yes, there will be Europe happenings before
Did
that.
Did you miss that whole coach talk about empowering and
being Did you miss the whole shutting the fuck up talk about shutting the fuck up? No, you didn't.
Yeah.
You missed it.
And, yeah. Wherever we see you guys next, I think it'd be awesome to get another podcast together.
Yes.
I reckon so. You're right.
My studio equipment isn't that large.
That's karaoke studio.
Some friends have ugly sweaters they wear on trips together and stuff. And we have now, I guess, a podcast. And it's a tradition that we've got to keep going.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to talk to some really techie people about what to do. Shit. Maybe I'm just going to have to buy some internet space. I guess they call it
internet. Some internet, some space on the interwebs.
Yeah, I need some real estate on the internet.
You should get your own website. You should get your own website and you can just do your podcast on it.
Yeah, and that, seems very extravagant, though.
No,
like, is it going to be?
You are going to buy. You are going to buy that butts site.
The what?
Butts. What was it?
Tits? Was it tits?
No, it wasn't butts. Tits. It was about butts.
The website.
Remember New Year's?
Oh, yeah. We came up with some
goodbutts.com or something.
What? Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jizz.
Ask Jizz. And
someone should definitely buy Ask Jizz.
It's not going to be me.
I'm not putting my name on it.
I will put my name on something butts.com.
That butt one was better, though.
It was, but I don't remember what it was.
I don't remember it.
Because you were all drunk.
We were all drunk.
Maya hasn't been drinking for reasons that are hers. But, yeah, so she's had to deal with us in various stages of drunk. What?
What was it?
Who the fuck's going to hear me?
Oh my god.
Who's gonna hear me? Who's gonna hear me on the app?
No, but she was like, shh, as if I'm gonna worry about the neighbors.
Oh god. Oh, by the way, we left a whole bunch of trash out there, including the bottle from which we set the
bottle.
And somebody cleaned them out.
Oh, nice.
Did they really?
Yeah.
That's like our nosy neighbor who took all of our fucking plant clippings.
I feel bad because those people are real nice, and I hope it wasn't our actual neighbors.
Oh.
There might be people picking
up
the recycle.
So you left just a bottle and stuff out there?
The rockets.
And all the sticks.
Yeah. Oh, shit, yeah.
Not all the sticks. The one stick that got stuck to the ground, which was the best.
Best stick.
Was that the one that went sideways instead of upwards?
No, it stayed.
Oh, okay.
And then it blew up in our faces.
That's the one that I meant. The one that went sideways instead of upwards.
That said, would you like to say anything?
Let's get a taco.